You are Locked On Sooners, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma Sooners. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Sooners Nation, and welcome to the Locked On Sooners Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Thank you for joining us. My name is John Williams. You can follow me on Twitter at John9Williams. You can read my work covering the Dallas Cowboys over at InsideTheStar.com. You can also hear me on the Cowboys Brawl podcast weekly with Pastor Carl Day. And joining me today, as he does every day, is former Oklahoma Sooners offensive lineman David Walker. You can follow David on Twitter at D_walk74. And you can also hear him on the Iron Horse podcast. Hey, and also go check him out on the Locked On Dodgers podcast from last week, where he joined their show to talk about what it was like to experience the Dodgers World Championship win this past October. David, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing good, man. You start talking about that Dodgers thing, man, that gets me fired up just thinking back about that night. So, yeah, that was fun being on Locked On Dodgers. And, you know, today, though, man, I'm excited to talk about how the Sooners, you know, had a pretty good weekend, even though they didn't play. You know, there's some things we're going to talk about today with how the race has unfolded while they were, you know, sitting there idle, and how Texas gave us more fodder for, you know, their performance. And I personally can't wait for segment two, because I've got a whole lot to say about our friends in Austin.
And Texas just makes it easy, don't they? They just really, they give you so much ammunition at this point. But let's talk about the weekend that was for the Oklahoma Sooners. They didn't play. Obviously, it was bit of a disappointment. They didn't get to play because of COVID-19 concerns and contact tracing and things like that. But it was a good weekend for them nonetheless, with Iowa State going down to Austin and pulling off a pretty big win for them, for their program, for the school. How important was that win for them, and what kind of a statement did it make for Iowa State moving forward?
It made a huge statement, because if you think about the 2018 season, they had this exact same opportunity. Right, the OU-Texas rematch in 2018 only happened because Iowa State could not win that game in Austin. Had they won it, it would have been OU and Iowa State in 2018, because Iowa State controlled their destiny. They just needed to beat Texas on the road, couldn't do it. And I think that, you know, it's part of the growth of a program that Matt Campbell has had. I mean, they had the near miss in 2018. You know, last year they beat Texas in Ames, and, you know, almost beat Oklahoma in Norman. And they've been coming on for a few years. So I think for them, it's definitely a flagship moment for their program, not because Texas is great, certainly not because Texas is back. I mean, that's a whole other thing we'll dive into in segment two. But I think just the fact that what the game meant and the implications of that game, and that it was away from home, that I think it was a turning point for their program for sure.
And as you're talking, it reminds me a lot of what Baylor was going through in, you know, this decade when – they were kind of on the rise. It really wasn't until they went into Austin and they beat Texas that it was really like a seminal moment for their program. Now, obviously, a lot of things went down with Baylor to make Baylor what they are now. But Matt Campbell and Iowa State, they've kind of been on this trajectory for several years now. They've had some really, really strong talent. You know, that Hakeem Butler, David Montgomery. You know, now we're looking at Breece Hall. I think this is – he's recruiting really, really well, and he's putting good football teams on the field. And now it's actually coming across with wins. I mean, it's not even the same team that we saw lose to the University of Louisiana back in the opening week of the season. Is Matt Campbell probably the front runner for Big 12 Coach of the Year at this point?
Yeah. If you're looking at exceeding expectations and doing the most with what you have, I think that, yeah, it's Matt Campbell. You know, it's always, the Coach of the Year award, it's always kind of sometimes I think the coaches that have the best team year in and year out sometimes get punished for that. There's a little bit of a, you know, a fatigue with that. Like, do we always give it to the coach that has the best team? But I certainly think that in this particular year, yeah, Matt Campbell, just what he does, I think that team, what you want as a coach is you want your team to reflect you. Like, you want your identity to be put on your program, right? And I think that the way that Iowa State plays, and you look on the sideline, you watch the way Matt Campbell coaches, those two things mirror each other, right? Like, his identity is firmly planted in their on-field persona, not just, You know, he's not just a leader of their team. Like, they reflect him. And I don't know if they'll be reflecting him in the years to come, because he might have outperformed his post their names, and only time will tell on that. But there's going to be some big time jobs. There already are some that are starting to open up, and more that are coming. And I couldn't help but think, you know, as he walked across the field and consoled Dicker the kicker, and then went on to shake Herman's hand, that, you know, it's he could be walking across from the other sideline very easily if Texas, you know, so chose to pursue him. I think that he would be a fantastic hire in Austin, but for reasons that we'll talk about in segment two, I don't even think that's on their radar. I don't think they would even consider him, even though he's beaten them 2 years in a row now.
And do you think that Iowa State can continue this kind of trajectory with Matt Campbell or without? I mean, obviously with Matt Campbell, you got to like their odds to continue to be a competitive team in the Big 12. But say he were to move on, you know, Michigan job is coming open. There are going to be other big time jobs coming available this offseason. Do they have the ability to kind of sustain this success moving forward without Matt Campbell?
I think in a Big 12 right now, the way the Big 12 has been for the last several years, there's always an opportunity for somebody to be the new number two. Mm-hmm. Or for somebody to be the number three. And if he's recruited well enough for somebody to come in behind him and be successful right off the bat, then yes. But if you look at Iowa State historically, they had some good success under Dan McCarney in the early 2000s. They had Seneca Wallace. They were a top, you know, kind of a fringe top 10 team for a little while when Seneca Wallace was there, had some good success there. But then they go and get Gene Chizik off of a national championship at Auburn. Well, I'm sorry, before he won the national championship at Auburn. He couldn't win. Like, he got let go at Iowa State, basically. He bailed after a short time where he saw the writing on the wall. Like, he was not going to be able to win there. And then he kind of lands on his feet and wins a national title in Auburn. So, you know, take that, SEC people. Your national championship SEC coach couldn't win games in the Big 12 at Iowa State. But, you know, that's a conversation for another day.
He lucked into Cam Newton a little bit.
He did. And it looks like, you know, while we're on that topic, it looks like Coach O kind of lucked into Joe Burrow as well. So I think there could be some symmetry there between those two coaches that they had generational talent fall in their lap. I mean, Burrow transfers in and wins, you know, has an all world season. And I don't know if Coach O will be able to replicate what they did last year, but time will tell. But I just think if you look at Iowa State, we're being very presumptuous right now to say that Matt Campbell's not going to stick around for years, because maybe he wants to be the Bill Snyder of Iowa State football. I don't know.
Gary Patterson.
Yeah, he could be a Gary Patterson, another guy that owns Texas. So I'm having fun. But if you think about him leaving, you know, it would just be really crucial of what kind of guy they hire. Can they hire a guy that can come in and make it a turnkey thing? Or are they going to hire somebody that's going to come in with like a, you know, 3 or 4 year plan, like what Les Miles is trying to do, and say, we're going to only recruit high school kids. We're not going to do the JUCO stuff. Like, they come in with somebody that has that mentality, well, they're not going to be able to sustain it. So they would have to recruit some, or, you know, bring somebody in to that program that's going to have a win now mentality and really be able to build off of this, because they're going to get a lot of good PR the next few weeks. I mean, they're going to get the marquee game. They're going to get to, you know, be at AT&T Stadium. They're going to have that platform. And I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility to say that they might win the dadgum thing, because they've already beat the team that they're going to play most likely. So, you know, who's to say they don't win the Big 12 and be knocking on the door of the playoff? I mean, if anybody in the Big 12 thinks Oklahoma has a chance to win it, if Iowa State beats Oklahoma twice, I don't know. I mean, that Louisiana loss is still really bad, but who knows what their ceiling is if they win out.
Yeah, there's no telling what could happen, because there's still so much up in the air in college football with some of these teams like Ohio State that are at the top of the rankings. But you spoke about all-world talent, and I want to talk about another all-world talent real quick, and that's my guy, Breece Hall, who had a day against the Texas Longhorns on Saturday. He ran 20 times, 91 yards, touchdown. I mean, not an all-world day, but he did what he needed to do to help them get the win. But it was what he said after the game that we're going to talk about here. And this is what Breece Hall had to say. That it was the difference was, it's five-star culture versus five-star players. And that's bang, bang, shots fired, right?
Oh, man, that's not bang, bang, shots fired. That's turn the sideways and kill shots fired is what that was. I mean, that was the verbal version of Baker Mayfield planting the flag in the middle of the O at Columbus is what that was to me. I mean, and also, John, That is a spot on of a quote. Short, sweet, accurate, cut to the heart, drop the mic, walk away. Like, that's all that has to be said, because that's exactly what that was. It's exactly what that is.
Right.
And, you know, that's, you could fill in the blank on what team you're talking about in any given year when you have that situation with Texas. It's, you know, whatever culture, it's whatever overachiever, whatever it is, fill in the blank against five-star players. And when they win, it's usually somebody that's shorthanded. When you look at the roster, it shouldn't happen the way it happens, but it keeps happening. And Breece Hall dropping the mic, dropping the hammer, doing it all. And, you know, getting that shot in, kicking them while they're down. I know Sooner fans don't mind it one bit. And there are probably a lot more Sooner fans now, at least for a couple more weeks until Sooners might see them in Arlington. But a lot more Breece Hall fans in Oklahoma after that quote, I can assure you.
Yeah. I mean, whether he's playing for your team or you're playing against him, can't help but respect the player that he is. And you can't help but respect the fact that he's willing to drop that dagger in the post game, you know, because I think that's a perfect comparison there. You know, it's a little bit like the also like the Baker Mayfield crotch grab a little bit too. Like here I am. What, yeah, I mean, we just beat you in your home stadium for an opportunity to go to the Big 12 title game, and we were the better team. And coming up next, we're going to get into Texas, because we got a lot to say about Texas. This is a team that's got a bunch of upheaval happening. Who knows what their future holds? And I know David's got a lot to say about that. But first, let me ask you a question. Do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? Well, College Football Saturdays offer the perfect opportunity to watch football and chill with the only beer that's made to chill, Coors Light. Coors Light is cold, lagered, cold, filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Even though there are fewer teams playing on Saturdays, there's still plenty of games and other sports going on to give you the opportunity to relax and have a beer. So whether you're having a beer with friends, cooking some meat on the grill, winding down from working in the yard, or watching a full slate of college football games on Saturday, make sure you reach for the official beer of watching any sport or any team just to have a beer. You can now get Coors Light in its new look delivered straight to your door by going to get.coorslight.com. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. What is up, Sooners fans? And coming up later in the week on Friday, we will have our game preview, our keys to the game as the Oklahoma Sooners get ready to play Baylor, and we will have another hype movie of the week. Unfortunately, we weren't able to deliver our hype movie of the week this last week because Oklahoma was off due to COVID-19 reasons, but we'll have a good hype movie of the week contest for you. I'm coming for you, David. This is the week. I'm going to knock you off. I may be Kansas right now, but eventually Mark Mangino is going to come at you, and we're going to do this. We're going to win. We're going to get a win.
Big All right, win. Man, bring it. I'm waiting on it. I'm waiting for that matchup on Friday. I really enjoy our hype movie of the week segment on Friday. So I got one up my sleeve. So we'll just let it be.
At some point, David will knock down Goliath. So I'm just saying all that. Anyway, but hey, let's talk about a Goliath that was knocked down by what's been typically the proverbial David in the Big 12, and that's Iowa State. You know, Texas, what is going on there, man? It's a team that over the last 20 years or so, they had the big national championship win with Vince Young. They had some really, really good years with Colt McCoy. But aside from that, it's just a team that's really been an underachiever, especially the last decade or so.
All right, John. So I've been waiting all weekend to talk about this. So what I'm basically going to do is, and again, look, if you're new to the show, just so you know, like John and I, we both dig some pro wrestling, all right? And I know a lot of Sooner fans dig it. You got Jim Ross on the sideline for 20 years, except for this year, due to obvious reasons. But look, I'm going to be standing in the ring, taking a mic, and I'm going to cut a promo on Texas right now because it's going to feel really good for me. And I think it's going to feel good for you too. So just, hey, turn the volume up. Let's let some tears flow in Austin and let's just enjoy it for a second. But I got some things to say about our friends down there in that nasty burnt orange. So, John, back in 2011, Texas had this awesome thing land in their lap with ESPN. They worked out this deal for the Longhorn Network, right? Great for them. Excited for them. Oh, yeah, they were fired up about it. It's going to be great. They were going to create this monopoly of entertainment stream of this network, bankrolled by ESPN. It was going to lead to all this great exposure. And in the process of doing that, they killed the Big 12. They killed off the original Big 12. Colorado leaves. Nebraska got real fired up and left. Now, they've never been the same since, but that's another story. Missouri left, A&M left, and Oklahoma was kind of left like, do we stay? Do we hitch our wagon to our rival Texas? We could still play them in the Cotton Bowl like we did in the old Southwest Conference days. We could keep that game intact. We don't have to stay because of Texas. But they did. Oklahoma stayed. And even though they stayed, Texas had basically created an opportunity for themselves to have this monopolized situation where they could, in theory, run this league. Mm-hmm. And all they've done since, John, since 2011, since they got that network and ran off four teams in the league, and we brought in West Virginia, and we brought in TCU, is, well, they've gone 63-48. If you're a math person, which I know our boy Blinken Riley is a math person, we had him on a while back. He's a stat man. He's probably got a spreadsheet for all this. But that's a 56.7% winning percentage from one of your giants of the league, your big ESPN bankrolled Longhorn Network TV deal, Texas Longhorns, 63-48. And in the process of that, they had three straight seasons of seven losses, and they're about to have an 11th straight four-loss season. They're one loss away from that in a shortened season. They're still going to find a way to lose four, I promise you. It's going to happen. Got guys opting out now. Got guys jumping off the ship. Going to look for a new head coach already. But you know who they are, John? They're that backup quarterback in high school whose dad is the touchdown club president. That spoiled kid that's not very good, but dad's pouring money into the program. Dad's been in the ear of the coaching staff. And finally, that kid gets to play. Season's not going, like, hey, you know what? Let's just get that kid in. His dad's giving a lot of money to the program. Bought us a lot of nice gear. Fed our players really well. And what happens when that kid gets in? He sucks. And it costs his team. And he's not any good. Players looking at you like, why is this guy playing? Well, you know, his dad, you know, he's got everything given to him. Got this great situation. It was on a silver platter for him. But when it came to actually playing football, he could do everything else. But when it came to playing football, he couldn't get it done. And that's who the Texas Longhorns are. They have everything in the world at their disposal. They got the recruiting. They got the facilities. They got the state of Texas in their back pocket. They own the state of Texas in theory. Yet, they can't beat TCU. They can't beat Oklahoma State. They can't beat Iowa State suddenly. They can barely freaking beat Kansas. Lest we forget, they had to kick a field goal after giving up dadgum near 50 points to Kansas in Austin. They had to kick a field goal at the end of the game to win that game last year. Like, that's who they are. But yet who they think they are is a team that Urban Meyer is sitting in the studio in a really cush job, sitting there thinking, I can't wait to go coach those guys. That's who they think they are. But that's not who they are. And you know what? They might get Urban Meyer. They might throw enough money at him to say, come save us. He might jump off his couch and go do it. And if he does, good for them. And sad for him, because what he's going to walk into is the same thing that Mack Brown left. It's an underachieving program that has every resource. You got a bunch of guys that are born on third base and thought they hit triples. And that's who their program is. They're soft, they're entitled, and they're not holding their end of the bargain. And what they've done is they use their political power with a power play to get this network done. They killed off the league, and now they let Oklahoma carry the whole conference. They had their biggest rival step in and carry the league on their behalf. So they diminished the league by running teams off, and then they further diminished it by not producing good football, which was all they were supposed to do, was be that number two, to provide that steady, like, okay, the Big 12 can survive if Oklahoma and Texas are both great. But Texas can't even be average or above average. And they certainly can't get back. And I don't even know if they were here to begin with, John. When you look at, you talk about 20 years, yeah, they had Vince Young. Yeah, they had Colt McCoy. And they won one national title. They can't win the conference. They can barely play for the conference title. And who they are is really more of a – they're more like Oklahoma State than I think anybody wants to acknowledge. Mm. That they're front runners, and when the stakes are high for them, they can't get it done. They're ranked high, but when they play against Oklahoma and they're ranked high, they don't play very well. When they're not ranked high, they give Oklahoma a pretty good game. Same thing with Oklahoma State. When the stakes are high, Oklahoma dominates them. When the stakes are high and Texas sneaks into that Big 12 championship game, they get beat. They are not who they say they are. They're a fraud. They're a pretender. And the coaches that they ought to be going after, John, they think they're too good for. Mm-hmm. You know, they think they're too good for Gary Patterson. They think they're too good for Mike Gundy, who also owns them. They think they're too good for Matt Campbell, who's beat them 2 years in a row. They only think that their level is the Urban Meyers, the Nick Sabans. They probably think Bill Belichick wants to try his hand at college football. Like, that's who they think they are. And they think they're too good to go and get the people that they can't beat. Right? There's something missing. Oh, yeah, like, yeah, I know that they beat us, but that's just because we don't have a good coach. No, those coaches are beating you because they're good football coaches, and you'd behoove yourself well to go and actually pursue one of those people that you can't beat, who's figured something out. Like, you think about winning in Austin. We just talked about last segment, Iowa State winning in Austin being a huge point for their program. But I don't really know if that's true, John, because who doesn't win in Austin? I mean, Oklahoma doesn't win in Austin only because we don't get to play there. But, I mean, Kansas almost won in Austin last year. TCU won in Austin this year.
True.
Oklahoma State always wins in Austin now. I mean, Iowa State wins in Austin. It's not even a big deal. So, yeah, Texas, we're going to have more fun at your expense because you're going to do some other crazy stuff in the offseason. And now you want to fire Tom Herman. Oh, by the way, let me bring this up. You want to fire Tom Herman, not because he's the most immature coach in the Power Five, not because he is mocking Locke, the quarterback at Missouri, on the sideline doing the little thing on his chest. There's a great video of it online. You can go find it. I'm sure most of you Sooner fans have seen it 17 times. He's mocking the quarterback, doing the hand gestures on the sideline like an immature ninth grader. Not because he was flipping off the camera and got caught on signing day on ESPN, being goofy. Not because he just says stupid things, but because he can't win football games. So you weren't embarrassed by his behavior. You weren't embarrassed by all the strip club stuff and all that stuff. It's only now that he can't get you to the Big 12 championship game. And now all of a sudden you don't like him anymore. So you should have been embarrassed about 7 different times by how he acts. But now, because he doesn't win the right games, now you finally want to get rid of him. But you're going to get what you deserve. And if you get Urban Meyer, I don't think anything's going to change. And they just get more fodder. Because all you guys at Orange Bloods, we're all about Urban Meyer. Oh, we don't want him. He's got bad character. We're too good. They were on the high horse back then, John. They didn't want Urban Meyer because he wasn't a Texas guy. He didn't have the right kind of conduct. Didn't run the right kind of program. And now they're just clamoring. They're just drooling over Urban Meyer. And those tweets still live. And those tweets are going to come back. All this stuff, all the high horse they were riding about, we don't want that down here. Oh, but now you want it because you can't win without it, apparently. So it's good to be a Sooner fan. It's going to be fun off season to watch that. But yeah, just had to get that off my chest. So, hey, Texas fans, hang in there, because we're going to hang in there with you, and we're going to have more fun, but hang in there anyway.
And that's the bottom line, because David Walker said so. No, you're on it. I think everything you said right there is right on point. And the biggest reason the Big 12 is so poorly thought of is because Texas can't, like you said, hold up their end of the bargain. And coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on with Oklahoma Sooners, where they're at in the polls, and does it make sense for maybe Shane Beamer to be heading east? We'll talk about that coming up next here on the Locked On Sooners podcast.
But now I want to tell you about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. It is easy to eat and 100% covered in chocolate. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They've got 18 great flavors, including new options like caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry Garcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. They have nut and non-nut flavors. And best of all, they're good for you. Most of their bars have about 18 grams of protein and only 4 or 5 grams of sugar. And do you need a protein bar with a Christmas flair for the holidays? Hey, try the white chocolate cookies and cream, white chocolate salted caramel. And then through the end of Cyber Monday, Built Bar is offering 25% off every purchase and will throw in 2 free candy cane brownie Built Bars with your purchase. And if you use promo code LOCKEDON, you can save an additional 20% off. So that's an amazing savings of up to 45% off your order of Built Bar at BuiltBar.com. For the best tasting protein bar on the market, go to BuiltBar.com.
Hey there, Sooners Nation. And before we get into talking a little bit more about the Oklahoma Sooners, I want to tell you about another Locked On podcast. That's the Peacock and Williamson NFL podcast. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and more around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. But coming up here on the Locked On Sooners podcast, we're going to continue talking about the Oklahoma Sooners. And there's a report that came out recently that Shane Beamer, assistant head coach on the offensive side of the football, interviewed for the South Carolina job. Now, David, what do you make of this news that's come out over the last couple of days?
Well, I think that Shane Beamer makes a lot of sense for a South Carolina. And I'm just going to go with the obvious here, because there's a lot of things you can overthink. You can say, well, he's on Lincoln Riley's staff. He's, you know, been a part of a championship program at Oklahoma. He's a younger coach. He's got a lot of upside. But at the end of the day, what South Carolina would need to be looking to do is to create something that isn't right now and create something that hasn't been. I mean, Steve Spurrier tried it. Lou Holtz tried it. Will Muschamp tried it, all with, you know, relatively decent success at times. I mean, they all won some games they probably shouldn't have. Spurrier and Holtz got them pretty solid for a while. But what Beamer has that can't be overstated, and I know that not every coach's son is a good head coach. I know there's plenty of, I mean, Derek Dooley at Tennessee can be a great case in point. But to me, the lineage, because of what his dad, not just that Frank Beamer was a great coach, John, it's that he was a great coach at Virginia Tech and that he created something and sustained something at Virginia Tech. And Shane Beamer, and maybe I'm partial to this because I'm a coach's kid, right? And coach's kids kind of have like a, there's sort of like a fraternity of that. You just know what you grow up with, and you know the things that you know only because you are a coach's kid. And there's no doubt in my mind that he's been privy to all throughout his life what it took to do that, what it took to do it in Blacksburg. And then to know that if you go into a program like South Carolina, what it would take to be able to have a chance to replicate something like that. And I don't know that South Carolina could ever be a power, but they could be a threat in the East potentially with the right coach that has the right mentality, that has the right vision. So yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't think that Oklahoma fans, when Beamer came on board, I don't think anybody thought he's going to be here forever. If you did, sorry, because his last name is just going to carry too much cachet. He's going to get a head coaching job eventually. And so that might be, you know, go right to the SEC might be a big jump, but yeah, I think he'll be well equipped for it. I like the guy. I think he carries himself very well. He's great on social media. He gets that part of the element of the game too. So I think he would probably take a lot of what Oklahoma does, you know, with Annie Henson and their team up there, just killing the social media game, take that to South Carolina as well as things to implement. So yeah, to me, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, you look back just at his coaching history, man, he's coached for a who's who of college football coaches. From 2001 to 2003, he was a grad assistant under Philip Fulmer at Tennessee. He coached under Sylvester Croom at Mississippi State, coached under Steve Spurrier, and he was a big part of their recruiting program there, and they had a lot of success at South Carolina there. Went to Virginia Tech, coached running backs there, coached for the Georgia Bulldogs, tight ends, special teams, and then he's the assistant head coach for Oklahoma. He's done a lot of different things throughout his college coaching career, which I think really sets him up to be a very well-rounded coach and potentially kind of carry that into being a successful coach at South Carolina. You don't really have to overcome as much in the SEC East. I mean, you got Georgia, you got Florida, but those teams are so up and down. They're not as consistent as like an Alabama is in the West. And so you have a good opportunity to be very competitive pretty early on. You get your first recruiting class in there, and who knows what could happen. They could become a really good program. And it's like you said, it's not just that he's a coach's kid, but he's had so much experience and so much experience coaching away from his dad as well. My grandfather went to Virginia Tech, and so I followed Frank Beamer for a long time just because, again, as I've said before, my college didn't have a college football team. So I followed the Virginia Tech Hokies because it's where my grandfather went to school. And, you know, Frank Beamer, he's a legend there. And he was a lifer. And if you're a college football team, you're looking for a guy that you think can be your head coach for his whole life. And if things work out with Shane Beamer, he could be that guy for them. South Carolina's struggled to find their head coach. I mean, they tried it out with Steve Spurrier and they had some success, but never got to the national championship level that they were hoping for. But Shane Beamer could be that guy that helps take them there. Do you think that he's kind of ready to take that step?
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, you just, especially after you just laid out his, you know, his track record and who he's been with and what he's done. I mean, yeah, he was a part of the Georgia staff that went to the national championship game, and Lincoln kind of, you know, picked him off that staff. So yeah, he's seen and done it all, I think, as an assistant. And while he's not like, you know, the offensive coordinator, quote unquote, or, you know, a lot of times you look at guys that get those jobs, like, you know, the DC or the OC somewhere, or they've been a head coach from, you know, at a Sun Belt conference team or something like that to get an SEC job. But to me, like I said, that just the, you know, and you nailed it, John, people are looking for their long-term head coach. And at these schools that haven't had traditional success, like a South Carolina, that they're not a powerhouse. A lot of times they, you know, they might recruit a young coach and the expectation is, man, he's going to get us really good, but we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop, that he's going to leave the first time, you know, the big time job comes open. If LSU comes open or if Florida comes open, he's going to walk out the door. And he's probably selling himself on the fact that, look, I watched what my dad did at Virginia Tech, and I like the idea of coming and building something and staying and making it my own. Because there's a lot to be said for that. You know, everybody's not going to be, you know, the Urban Meyer that wins championships all over the place and always has that success everywhere you go. So there's some value in just creating a legacy. I mean, Bill Snyder is a great example of that at Kansas State, what he did there, right? So mm-hmm. If Frank Beamer or, you know, Shane Beamer could go out to South Carolina and give it 15, 20 years, then I think he would be thought of greatly there for forever in Columbia. So yeah, I think it makes sense. And, you know, it's one of those things for Lincoln Riley, and it hasn't happened yet. So he would potentially be like the first guy to leave and take a big head coaching job off of Lincoln's staff. But if Lincoln is doing what he's supposed to be doing, which is turning out championship teams, playoff teams, potential national championship teams, he would just be the first of many to follow, because mm-hmm. that's what that level of program does. They produce head coaches year in and year out. So, you know, Sooner fans, don't fall in love with these assistant coaches. I mean, you know, spoiler alert, don't fall in love with Alex Grinch, because if he gets his defense as good as we want it to be, then people are going to come knocking on his door, and they might do it sooner than later. I mean, Vanderbilt's open as of this weekend. I mean, there's going to be lots of jobs out there. They're going to look at an Alex Grinch and say, hey, we've already seen enough that we know he's got it. Mm-hmm. So then they might not be waiting until he's a top 20, top 10, top 5 defense at Oklahoma to show that he can be a great head coach. So, you know, these guys, like, I mean, Kel Gundy's probably safe. He, you know, Kel's been there forever. He's probably not leaving. But there's those young up-and-coming coaches that are having success, that are great recruiters, that have shown they can be a good coordinator. Those guys aren't going to hang around Norman as long as we'd like them to. And that's just a byproduct of having a great program.
Yeah, and eventually these guys are going to go off and find a job somewhere else. They don't stay forever. You look even at, let's circle back to Texas. Will Muschamp was kind of slated to be the guy to take over from Mack Brown. Well, he didn't want to wait around for forever, and so he took a job at Florida. Things did not work out for Will Muschamp at Florida. They didn't work out at South Carolina either. But yeah, Alex Grinch, I think, is going to be a hot commodity, and especially like in the Big Ten, I think, where he had a lot of success as the decent defensive coordinator for Ohio State before coming to Oklahoma. I mean, I could foresee a potential opportunity for him even at Michigan this offseason if they decide, you know what, let's get a Big Ten guy that coaches defense, because we need to reestablish ourselves and our defensive identity. But let's talk a little bit about the most recent college football polls that came out. And Oklahoma, they're sitting at 13 in both the AP and the coaches poll, and one spot behind Iowa State. Sounds about right. Right, David?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I mean, you know, in the college football playoff ranking last week, Oklahoma was ahead of Iowa State. And I think that in this situation, I think 13 is probably lower than they actually probably are as far as like how they're playing and what their talent level is. But, mm-hmm. yeah, they've got time to pass that up. And I think, I'm really just kind of at the point with the AP and the coaches poll. I honestly don't even care about it anymore. It's almost just like it's been rendered meaningless, because they put that out there on Sunday. And, you know, no offense to our guy, Ryan Aber, who's an AP voter that was on with us, you know, a week or two ago. Ryan, keep voting. I love the AP poll. You know, we'll have you back on soon. But with the college football playoff, once we get to that point in the season when those rankings are coming out on Tuesday, and the fact that there's so much, you know, disparity between or differences between the AP poll, the coaches poll, and that college football playoff ranking, it's almost kind of like, okay, that's interesting, but let's wait till Tuesday and see what that looks like. And what that looked like last week was we were at number 11. in front of Iowa State, and you had Northwestern up there in front of Oklahoma. Northwestern lost, so you might think, oh, okay, well, they'll move up to number 10. But then you had Iowa State go to Austin and win against a top 20 team. So I think that with Oklahoma sitting out that West Virginia game, had they won impressively in West Virginia on a Saturday night in primetime, then yes, I think they probably would have stayed ahead of Iowa State. But just the way the college football playoff ranking does, they evaluate that body of work. I would anticipate Oklahoma might not make much of a jump in that ranking, and they might kind of stay in that 11 spot and have Iowa State be there at number 10.
And there's still a lot to be determined about where Oklahoma finishes in the college football playoff rankings. If they're able to win out, win the Big 12 conference, there's a good chance that they're going to find themselves in a New Year's Six Bowl when those final rankings come out. And we'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow, because over at The Athletic, they released their most recent college football bowl projections. And it had Oklahoma in a very interesting matchup that I think would be really a lot of fun, not just for Oklahoma fans, but for fans of the other team. And it could renew a old rivalry. But we'll talk about that on tomorrow's episode of the Locked On Sooners podcast. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you go and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For David Walker, I'm John Williams. Boomer.
Sooner.